Friday, we'll begin our second budget work session of the, since preparing for fiscal year 21. It is Monday, April 27th, 2020, and we have convened the mayor and council of the town of Berlin. All council members are present except for council member Brittingham. So we're going to, tonight, our discussion will be about the utilities funds, or also called the enterprise funds, which are the services that are provided by the town of Berlin that are not part of the general fund. So if we're ready to go, let's dive right now.
The first presentation this evening will be from Chris Carroll regarding health care renewal. So in your packets, you have a packet of paper that's titled July 1, 2020 Annual Insurance Update. Chris?
Thank you. Good afternoon, early evening. Appreciate everyone having me in. Jumping right into the proposal. First page, you'll see an executive summary recap. It starts and will end with the recommendations for this upcoming year. Anything that we talk about from a benefit perspective goes into effect July 1st. That's the policy year running from July 1st, 2020 to June 30th, 2021. The renewal recommendations after the marketing process is to remain with CareFirst, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and not make any plan changes. So those plans will remain the same underlying copays, structure in terms of network, doctors and physicians. In addition to that, the health reimbursement arrangement or the HRA is recommended to stay the same as well. And finally, the financial impact to take that action on blended with the HRA and the medical premium, and there is a multiple line discount that we'll also be presenting, will be a 3.79% increase over current. That results in a monthly increase of $2,712 in aggregate, and we'll talk about how that's shared, recommended to be shared between employer, the town, and the employees and their co-premium. The marketing was as a result of reviewing United Healthcare and Aetna, which both declined to be competitive in this particular policy year, as well as we looked at the Legit Insurance Trust, which is using the Cigna network. Our recommendation to remain with CareFirst is based on historical changes within this, the last three cycles, as well as it is with the maximum cost picture, which would be higher under the Legit program. There's some maximum risk that we would have to take on a two-year commitment. Finally, our ancillary marketing was focused to our current incumbent, as well as CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield, because they are offering us a bundled discount to put the dental and vision with them, lining it up to the same medical carrier. And that was an appealing opportunity within the total rate relief that's provided by CareFirst.
Now, does that mean that by bundling it, there was a savings in the total cost of over $18,000?
That is correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're all understanding the situation. Thank you.
The next page is the medical renewal initial release. We're labeling it as M1. The renewal was released from CareFirst initially at 12.4%, keeping everything the same. Jumping quickly to the next page, which is M4, which is the results. As you imagine, there's an M2, an M3, and an M5, but we redacted it down to the key details. With the medical renewal bundle discount at M4 with the health reimbursement arrangement, that's where in the lower right-hand corner you get the net effect of the 3.79% cost increase versus current. Jumping forward one page ahead, which is an important page, the recommendation is to split that increase on a 50% share. That means 50% of the increase monthly will go to co-premiums paid by the employees that are enrolled in the plan, and the other 50% will be absorbed internally as part of the employer and town costs. What's most important when the employees are looking at an increase is the lower right-hand corner, which is the increased cost per pay. So what you see under the current column, stratified by employee, employee plus spouse, employee plus child or children and family, as compared to the renewal projected increase. As an example, $17.35 is the employee-only cost currently. It would increase to $23.64, or effectively increasing $6.29 per pay 26 times per year, which aggregates to $160.94 for reference. Those cost increases for employee, spouse, children, and family are higher based on their beginning totals being higher and are shared at a pro rata basis from one to the other. The last cost item on the next page on M4 with HRA includes the town employer financial impact, the monthly increase being $2,712. The employee is absorbing half of that increase, leaving the employer increase at $1,356 monthly, or budgeted to be $16,272 annually. The reason why we use that name as estimated is that your volumes of enrolled members will change throughout the course of the year, but based on this snapshot in time and multiplying it forward 12 months, that's what the annual total cost increase is recommended. Any questions on that while we're on the medical topic?
Yes. The current plan that we have only allows us to use in-network labs for our employees, correct?
Yes.
And the way that I understand it is PRMC and ADH are both out-of-network?
That is correct.
Is there an analysis that's been done to show what that cost increase would be to include those two regional hospitals?
Yeah, very good question. So we are looking at some solutions regionally, in particular with the being in the shadows of AGH and being good community partners that they are. The downside is that CareFirst does not even allow it, nor does United Healthcare or Aetna. So they aren't options for us. If we are self-funded, some of the strategies that we would look at, potentially even with the legit arrangement, you can then make accommodations outside of the contract. But a financial analysis hasn't been done in the current environment only because it's not an option.
Okay. But it is something we're looking at for future fiscal.
Absolutely. And we look at it extensively, and we're actually working with AGH right now on another potential concept for the community which could benefit us here as well. So it's something we're looking closely at. The cost increase for the LabCorp and the Quest of the world give very, very deep discounts. But if it's a siloed expense and the hospital is looking at it more as a global wellness umbrella, we believe that there's some penny cost increase, but maybe some pound gains that would be available. But they have to be kind of bundled together. CareFirst, United Healthcare, Aetna, they're not really interested in looking at that long term yet. Maybe down the road.
Do you anticipate that we'll be able to give us some meat to work with on the next budget?
Yes.
Is something we're transpiring within the next year?
Yeah, potentially there's something for us in the next 12 months, yes.
Because I know the town of Berlin, ever since the very beginning when they first started talking about the concept of a hospital here in the town, has been very supportive, and we have a great deal of confidence in the services that they provide. So I think I'd speak accurately when all of us would be very pleased if you can make that come to fruition.
Excellent. You know, we believe in it as well very strongly, so I think it'd be something that'd be great for the local community.
Thank you.
And there's some data that we'll be able to extract in terms of helping structure some wellness and community education as well. So I think that there's multiple benefits from it. So we're excited about the opportunity, and it would be potentially as soon as January 2021. Any other medical specific questions before we talk a little bit about the bundle discount and the dental and vision opportunity? As we mentioned briefly before, the medical premium savings by bundling the dental and vision with CareFirst translated to $18,535 annual estimate based on current snapshots. And that is broken down, it's great savings, but obviously we have to look very closely at the benefits as well and make sure that the employees are satisfied with the dental and vision options. So we start with looking at the CareFirst Dental, very well-respected dental carrier in the market. One of the unfortunate parts when we're comparing them is the current principal program has a very, very strong usual, customary, and reasonable fee schedule. So it's hard for us to be as competitive with the CareFirst option. We did offer two options to help combat that. And what we did is we offered a fee schedule program. So if a member uses a in-network dental provider for their care, the fee schedule is not nearly as important because there's no balance billing to the member or their family. We have also offered CareFirst's most robust usual customary reasonable fee schedule, which is the 90th percentile, as an upgrade option. So the individual employee, for their needs, based on whether their dentist is in-network or out-of-network, will be able to decide whether they want to go with a fee schedule plan and save a little bit of money in the premium in most cases, or pay a little bit more to upgrade to a UCR that's similar to what they have now. The preventative care cleanings will both be 100% under both of the new options to match the principal. However, in network, we do have a decrease in coinsurance. That's the amount that the employee versus the carrier would have to pay by 10% on basic and major services, dropping from 90 and 60 down to 80 and 50. Unfortunately, that is just the high limit under the program that's available through CareFirst. Within those premiums, we'll jump and touch base on vision, and then we'll talk about the impact of the premiums to the members. The vision program is an easier transition. Unfortunately, we don't get as many points when we talk about the discounts. We get 2 points.
Let me just interject one thing back on dental. It probably will only affect maybe a third of the employee group. With the two options with CareFirst, the annual plan maximum goes from $1,000. Under the one Blue Cross plan, it's a $1,500 annual, and under the other, it's a $2,000. So where that plays and where it's important, where it really plays in is for those employees and or their family members that are having root canals, crowns, things of that nature done. There's a bigger benefit. Now, that's probably based off what I've seen, going to affect maybe a third of our employee group. On the positive is what I'm getting at.
Have we looked at who our employees are using for dental care and whether they're covered predominantly in network versus
I have contacted six dentists in the area that I'm aware of that people use, and they are on par with this new plan. So what I would ask, if anybody in this room or any employees, as we always do, let me know who your provider is and I'll make the phone call.
And part of that open enrollment process, we'll do a lot of one-on-one with the employees to help make that decision, to make sure that they review their particular provider, because I know it can change, and just I'll help them think through, okay, that's your family dentist, but if you needed a root canal, would you still go there, or are you going to end up in Salisbury, and making sure they know how to get to the resources that they need to keep as much of the care network as possible. Moving forward to the vision, the vision's pretty easy from the standpoint of Davis Vision. It's very widely accepted through CareFirst, Blue Cross Blue Shield. We see most of the large employers in the area that happen to either use CareFirst or CareFirst third-party administrators do use the CareFirst Vision Network, so we wouldn't see any problems or major disturbances there for the employees. There are some small increases and some small decreases in different places based on your current enrollment. But in general, we won't see this as very disruptive to the employees. From a payroll deduction standpoint, and again, that's critically important for us to consider as we're looking at any changes, your dental payroll cost changes are listed. These are all listed as 26 pays per year, because again, that's what the employees will see on a per paycheck basis. And you can see that the dental plan one would actually decrease by 69 cents of pay for the individual, as opposed to increase by $2.45 if they wanted the $2,000 annual maximum benefit, kind of the top of the line CareFirst plan. One of the nice things about that is if they needed a crown this year but didn't need one next year, they can move between those two plans and there's no restriction or you're stuck. It's an annual election, so there's some flexibility there for the employee and their families. The vision payroll deductions, as you can see, we start getting into some kind of fine decimal points, 17-cent difference for the individual. So as I indicated earlier, we don't see that as usually very disruptive for the employee. thing in synopsis is the proposed recommendation, and broken into three bullet points. The first is that we'd like to renew the medical plan with a bundled discount, bundling the dental and vision discount to get to a 4.72% premium increase on the medical, a 0% increase on the HRA to a blended average at 3.79% above current. We'd like to share that increase on the medical between the employee and the town at a 50-50 co-premium cost share. And as bundled and mentioned above, we'd like to offer the dual dental option plan with the new vision through Care First to maximize the discount.
Good. Does anyone have any questions for Chris?
I think. Hold on 1 second. I think sure. I do. Chris, what was the increase? So, if I understand this correctly, if I'm looking at M4, mm-hmm. With the HRA, that's as it is currently, unchanged.
Yes.
The annual increase is going to be $16,272?
That's the net increase to the town on the employer side of the aisle.
So that's the 50-50 split?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Jeff, just out of curiosity, how many people take advantage of the vision and the dental?
Dental, talking vision and dental, roughly 50-55, majority.
Thank you.
And that's from 70 or 80 employees?
That's out of 72. Now all 72 employees don't elect health benefits with them as well.
Questions answered for now. And of course, if you think of anything, let Jeff know. You can always follow it up. Chris, thank you very much for
thank
the
you.
Presentation. It was very informative, and we thank you.
And again, any employee and any of you all, if you need me to make a phone call for you, I believe I have called the provider that Dean you normally use. I think I've already called.
Come on for this?
Yeah, you're good. But I called the ones that I. That stick out in my head anyway. I try to do that every year.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you both for your hard work. You can keep those in there.
And you can be next.
I don't know
my name again.
You're not using it.
Here, I've got an opening statement.
If that's fine.
We're going to move into the Enterprise Fund work session. Some things I want to highlight, and I wish everyone can bear with me. I'm operating on about 20 minutes sleep.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything's great. I just had all of you all on my mind last night.
Good things, right?
Good things. Employee wages have been adjusted by 2%. Health insurance, with your approval, will renew at less than a 4% increase. And all the liability insurances have been projected with a 5% increase. I wish to remind everyone that the utility funds operate as a quasi-business, so they can operate with a profit with the exception of the electric utility, because they are regulated. The overall FY21 utility fund budget, electric, overall projected budget is up 3%. The fund is projected to have a contingency rainy day fund of $13,000 in FY21 versus $50,000 in FY20. This decrease in contingency is due to the increased costs that are mandated by the state of Maryland due to the requirements of purchasing renewable energy RECs or credits. Okay, I can go into great detail on that if we need so. We have to purchase. It's mandated how many RECs we buy each year, and those costs have gone up significantly. And I know the mayor is well aware. He's been truly supportive of a House bill. I think it's 516. I've been trying to get that thing kiboshed, but right now the momentum's
been pulled on that. I don't know.
There's nothing happening.
There's nothing happening.
Until the legislature.
That's right.
Has the opportunity to start up again.
That's right.
What's the bill about?
Increase.
The recs, first of all, the sizable increase of recs do not affect co-ops.
Okay.
But they affect the private companies and municipal.
And the municipals affects us because they never talked about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's only 5 municipally owned electric utilities in the state, and we're not much on anybody's radar because none of them are in the big counties. So we've been forgotten for 4, and we think that's what's happened here because most of them aren't really. Why were they? Because you didn't talk about it. And yeah. So I'm hopeful. But the thing is, like anything else, when they'll get to it, I don't know if it'll be this summer in a special session or if it'll be have to wait until the next legislative session. But the best I can say is I'm hopeful because in the series of hearings and presentations that were made, there was no big fuss. It was mainly information. So we shall say.
And that you went to Annapolis.
Yes.
More than once.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was 3 times altogether.
Right.
It was very informative for all parties because, again, we're not on anybody's radar.
And the difference in cost versus what was being proposed was pretty astronomical, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. What was the difference?
Well, it would have been, I think it was 10 or 12 years from now, hundreds of thousands.
Right.
Of
dollars.
Basically, they'd be wiping out all these utilities, and that's not even their intent. And I think it's just a matter, again, where, you know, the contention when this bill was passed last year was between the big boys, right? The very big privately owned utilities, and they went back and forth and back and forth. And when all that was happening, nobody was thinking about. And of course, they exempted the co-ops because they're owner owned. Mm-hmm. We're saying, well, if you exempt them, why not us? We're owner owned too.
Sure.
We're just a lot smaller.
Yeah.
So we didn't get a big pushback, but unfortunately, they had to suspend the legislature. So, again, I'm hopeful because nobody's been able to say, well, we'd rather you all go out of business, and then everybody's rates go up. That's not going to happen. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah. You're looking at, just to give you an idea, for 2019 into 2020, where we're at now, the RECs were costing us $156,000. They're going to go to $283,000.
And we're not against RECs.
It's worse after that, right?
Yeah.
Huh? The way the proposal right now, it gets stepped up and ramped up even more later.
Correct. As the mayor's alluding to, the issue with the RECs is not so much the RECs, it's the specific renewable energy credits, and they're focused on solar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, renewable for RECs, all the folks who are listening, are renewable energy credits. We've been doing them, we want to continue to do that. And this is a fight among the large stockholder-owned utilities. We don't have a fight. We presented what we have done, how our electric utility, along with a lot of other things the town's doing, why we were the first municipality to receive accreditation as an environmentally sustainable community in the state of Maryland. They were like, really? I said, just because we're small doesn't mean we can't be first at something. And again, my impression is, generally speaking, when they're up there and the big boys are fighting and the big counties, every night they say, oh, remember us? We're the Eastern Shore. Yeah, those people between Ocean City and the Bay Bridge. And oh, yeah, yeah, now we got that. And it's not something they're trying to do to be mean. It's just that they're talking in terms of hundreds of thousands of people. And hundreds of millions of dollars, and they look at a line, our whole budget would be like a simple little line item budget, and you know, we have to say this is very important to us. And I think when we have our opportunity, because they're very gracious, I think both times I had to wait 3 hours to speak. Plus, guess who goes first? The bigger communities. So that's fine. And we all, the Eastern Shore communities, and plus the folks out there in the Western Maryland, we waited. And served their time, and when we spoke, they were like, "Wow, that's what yeah." And I think I think we're right there, and hopefully, if we have to go through the whole process again, that'll be fine.
All five mayors and all five utility directors have all come together on this.
Mm-hmm.
Where does caucus fire?
Like, Mayor Easton, you know, so in certain cases, the electric utility directors testified, and in other cases, the mayors, and it all worked out. Yeah. So I'm hoping.
All right, in FY20, we increased our water fees by 5% and our sewer fees by 20%. In water and sewer, time period July of 2019 to March of 2020, the water fund has had an increase in revenues of $431,000.
How much, Jim?
I'm sorry, I take it back. In FY19, the revenue for the water fund was $431,000. In FY20, again, that same time frame, July through March, revenues are $474,000, an increase of $43,000, or a 10% increase. Okay? In FY20, we increased our sewer fees by 20%. Again, the same time frame, July 1 through March. In FY19, we had revenues of $1 million. In FY20, $1.4 million. An increase of $349,000, or a 32% increase. Okay. Water, overall, the budget is up 3%. Contingency is projected to be at $4,000 for FY21 versus $81,000 for FY20. Department head requested capital outlay is at $164,000 for FY21 versus $54,000 for FY20. In FY21, Jamie Latcham will share with you. The big thing that he'd like to do is to rebuild the pump house, the well house on Palatine. Down in the public works yard. Okay. Sewer, first and foremost, I want to share, when you take a look at the annual debt, it requires 59 EDUs to pay that debt, the sale. 59 EDUs. In FY20, we're going to experience a shortfall in sales. We budgeted EDU revenues to be at $466,000, and we've collected it to date $126,000. We are estimating a sale of 37 EDUs in the coming year. Overall, this projected FY21 budget is up 2%. Contingency for FY21 is $46,000 versus $44,000. Last year. Department head requested capital project for FY21 is $172,000. Major work is needed at two lift stations, Decatur Street and William Street, and various repairs at the plant, costing approximately $37,000. All of these planned capital improvements are slated for FY21. We are also projecting to have the sewer fund transfer to the general fund in FY21 of $50,000. This transfer will be contingent on the ending balance of the fund in FY21. Stormwater, overall, the budget is unchanged. There are no projected grants for FY21. We are estimating to have the stormwater fund transfer to the general fund, $25,000 in FY21 based on the ending balance of the fund. And that's pretty much what I have in there.
Basically, it's just a reminder because we don't talk about them every month. But the EDU, some years more money comes in than what we need for upgrades and so forth. Other years it's lower. But over time, it balances out, or at least has in recent years. But we, at this point, this is a year we're doing, and I think with good reason, don't anticipate there'll be as much new development as there has been the last couple of years. And I think we just go ahead and plan for a slower time for new development, and then we'll be able to judge it year over year as we see how the recovery goes.
Well, I think the irony of this is, Mayor and I, 2 months ago, we met with all the potential growth that was on the books. I was getting concerned
concern was at that point is that in 4 or 5 years, we may have to begin addressing that. So it's not like it's 4 or 5 months away, it's 4 or 5 years away. But now, you know, I'd like hope that the economy recovers enough so that we can be dealing with that in 4 or 5 years. But at this point, we're going to take a conservative approach because I think it's the only one that is rational.
And I'd like for everybody, I think the promising thing out of this, both funds, the trend is in the right way now with the rate increases that we're done.
But the number you gave for EDUs this year was $100,000+.
Yep.
That's actual sales. That's not what is projected to be so.
That's actual sales.
Okay.
Yeah.
To date, not counting in anything on the books currently.
Correct.
Again, it's a very conservative approach.
No. The actual amount is the actual amount.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the budget amount, it's the actual.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we'll start tonight with the electric utilities, so we'll walk over Greg Tim.
He's stealthy.
Good evening.
Good evening. So you have a big report printout of what the pages that stamp draft for fiscal 21 projection, starting with page one. We're going to go to electric fund and electric fund revenues projections, and then Tim will go over the major changes for what's department requested to be for fiscal 21 and expenses and capital items. Projections for electric fund revenues with the help of our engineering company, Booth and Associates. Initially, we have included the projected commercial expansion and the residential growth, but due to the circumstances of the current situation, we kind of back out and took a very conservative approach. So overall, the residential services to be projected of an increase of 140,000. Commercial services increase of 15,000. General service, which is large buildings like AGH or Food Lion who have demand charges, an increase of 9,000. And we have a little increase on the streetlights of $2,000. Overall, electric fund revenues increase of 3%. Not major changes in revenues, was a slight increase. But again, just a reminder, it's operated cost. So if the purchase power going up in cost, we are increasing the revenue because it's a pass on cost to the consumers.
And just to give some, again, particularly for people listening, is we're talking about a 3.28% increase, which represents $174,000 out of a budget of $5,460,000+. So you know, it's just to give some perspective of what these numbers mean, because 3.2%.
Right.
This is very. We're grateful that it's not any more than that, but what we're talking about is less than $200,000 in a $5.4 million budget.
So starting with page two, going forward, electric administration, Tim is going to cover major changes.
As far as the 5,600, which is administration, That budget right there is really decreasing 1.4%. So that's part of it. It's going to be going down. I don't know how much you want me to talk about that since it's being reviewed.
I guess we're just going to cover the electric administration total budget, just may I suggest it for the listeners because they might not which is your rainy day fund, is decreasing to $13,000, which due to the revenue decrease, not being projected at the point of, as supposedly be projected with a high increase. And also you have a little bit change of the bond interest here and bond principal. And I see a little decrease of the general overhead, which is recalculated accordingly to the general fund balance.
So again, out of the projected budget of 1.375 or $1,375,000, talking about a reduction of $19,500.
Correct.
In projected income. Okay? 4%.
Hey, the next division there, that is the power plant division. That division is going to be increasing by 4.69%. The overall budget for that request is $3,058,782, with an increase of $137,057. Correct me if I'm wrong, that's due to the capital projects that we're going to be doing at the power plant.
And also you have your renewable energy credit increase of $216,000 in this department.
And I think, Jeff, you talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're going to skip the capital outlay items. It's an increase of $45,000 in this department, and then we're going to go in details. It's a separate printout so everybody can see what's the capital items.
As far as distribution, which is $5,620, that budget is pretty much staying flat. It's a 5.78% increase on distribution side. It's $56,096 increase. The total budget for the request for that division is $1,026,268.
And so for the power distribution, if I'm reading this correctly, for three new transformers, some transclosures, which quite frankly have here are those, underground electric services and electric poles.
That's correct.
We can go through the details. You have a separate printout for electric.
Yes.
So the power plant department, Tim, you want to go over this?
Yeah. As far as the capital projects, the power plant with the installation of the new natural gas engine, I'm looking to install what's basically called a SCADA system inside the power plant, which is a system that you remotely can start the engines, you can monitor the oil pressure, water, that type of thing from right in the office itself. And part of that is due to the fact that when number two engine failed, our person that operates the plant is actually standing right next to that engine when it failed, which could have, you know, been pretty drastic on what could have happened now. This will give us the capability of monitoring each engine remotely right from the office. You can keep an eye on water temperatures, oil temperature, exhaust temperatures, that type of thing. The way it's done right now is when the plant is running, Casey has to actually go to each engine while it is running every 30 minutes, and he records it on a piece of paper, what the temperatures are and that type of thing. So this basically gives you all an opportunity of automating the plant basically up to today's standards, what it should be. Also this is going to take care of a computer that is slated to be replaced because of the software that's on it. CARDS has recommended that this computer system that's there now be taken out, removed, and updated. This basically is doing both. It's going to replace that computer that's there now, but then it's also going to give us the opportunity to automate the power plant.
And that computer is being replaced because the software program was written.
That's correct.
How long ago?
1999.
It was
see there, that's the underground primary power switch. If you look at the substation next to the power plant, there's a big box structure frame there that was built there when the plant was initially built, so that tells you how old it is. I've been wanting to replace that for 4 or 5 years now, and I'd like to basically make that an underground switch where all the cables come into it underground, like you see on the road out here. Basically, that'll take care of that. And then the power plant relay upgrade, that's out in the substation itself. There's some relays out there that have been there since 1999. Their life has exhausted. It's a relay that protects the power plant between the output of the generator and the existing grid. So if something was to happen out in the field, this relay would actually open a device and break the connection between the generator and the grid itself, which is designed to do that. So that's what those capital improvements are to the power plant.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Would this power plant relay upgrade be a part of the generator monitoring control system?
No, sir. This is
so it would not work together?
No, this is two separate. The relay upgrade is out in the substation itself,
okay.
And then the SCADA system is actually inside the power plant.
Okay.
And the function of that is basically to start and stop the engines, monitor, you know, the vital information that's coming back from each engine, so you can monitor temperature the whole time, oil pressure, and that type of stuff. The relays for the power plant relay upgrade, they're actually out in the substation, and they monitor the grid from coming into the station from the outside, but they also monitor the output of the generators to the substation. So if a fault was to occur on the outside of the substation, it automatically tells the device to open to break the connection between the output of the generator and what's coming in.
Okay.
Yes.
But
they're
the
two.
Generator monitoring system, control system,
yes.
Would do away with the need for some guy to take a pencil and go record something,
yes,
every
sir.
Half hour.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And will that allow you to look at it remotely as well, like on your phone, if you're, I don't know, when
it can be set up that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there'd be more than one person that has this.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect.
Now this device for the SCADA system, that's over time. There's other things you have to do along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, with the new engine that they're putting in, only thing we have to do with that engine is run an Ethernet cable from the computer PC to the controller, which is right behind it on the other side of the wall. That's for the new engine. All the older engines, we have to run cabling back from each engine back to the relay room to get that information.
Madeline?
Yes.
Sorry. Can you take a look at the percentage change at the bottom? I think the electric administration is okay, but I'm thinking that power plant and power distribution, it's not making sense with the increase, but yet showing a decrease in the percentage change.
I'm sorry, are we looking at power distribution or
which
department?
I think it's both. I think it's power plant. It's, we're still in electric, but power plant, page 5.
5016.
And
okay, page 5.
Power distribution.
We have an increase of 137,000, which is roughly 5%.
On the document that I'm looking at, it shows an increase of $137,057 with a decrease of 1.61%.
Is something wrong?
No, you jump in a line. The 1.61 is belong to purchase power. Are we looking at the printout or online version?
I'm looking at the one that I got via email,
it's
timestamp.
Is it the bold line? Bold 1.56.
Yeah, it's got a wrong thing.
It's showing an increase, but timestamp on this one is 4/22/2020 at 2:44.
Sure, how's it doing? But if you look at my paper here, it's that line right above that.
Because mine are also coming through with like to the fifth or sixth decimal place.
It's different than the one you emailed us.
No, no, it's the same printout though.
No. And that, see, that formula down there on this one shows that 4.6.
But it's just the PDF file jumping a line below. Is that a number?
Yeah, so we should be going by the one that's in our packet, not the one you emailed us.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, the PDF is just shifting it out. But it's basically the same report. We didn't generate it twice. Somehow,
well, I can see it's the same number. It did.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's formatting a line, shifting the line.
It does.
So if you pull the one that's printed out, it's just the computer format.
And just something to be aware of, but it's done that in a couple other places where.
Yeah, it did it last time.
The formatting where it shifts something, I guess.
And I think I printed out the Excel sheet and it came out like you got it.
Okay.
And if you print out the PDF, it's like this.
It's not
yeah.
Okay.
Let's just
I'll make sure that online it looks the same as on the report. I didn't look at the PDF files.
Something to be aware of. Any of us were aware of it until this budget cycle.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for noting that. All right. Is there anything else?
We just need to finish the capital items. So the power plant department, to summarize, the control system and the monitoring system that Tim described and the one is staying inside the building requested to be for $70,000. Underground primary power switch at $35,000. And power plant relay upgrades, which is the one going outside, is $25,000. The total for the power plant department is $130,000 requested by department to be for fiscal 21 as the capital items. Then also we have power distribution department, and total is $87,500 and consists of, Tim, go ahead.
This is almost identical to what it is each year. We have a certain amount of three-phase transformers that have to be installed, which are commercial normally. And just to let you know, that money normally comes back to the town because the developer pays for it, so we kind of get that back. And also transclosure replacements, three-phase, we try to do two of those a year. We've been doing those every year now since I've been here, trying to basically get them out of the electric system. We got one at the fire department that's going to be coming up here as soon as the transformer comes in. Underground electrical services, with the virus and stuff going on, I kind of figure that we'll probably do 7 new services this coming year. If everything works out, that's at a cost of $17,500. Electric pole replacements, that's maintenance, thing that we do annually, and we do about 15 poles a year. Each pole is about $2,000 to replace it, and that's about $30,000 for a total of $87,500 for the distribution.
So total capital expenditure for electric department is $217,500, which will be supported by the operational revenues for fiscal 21.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Tim? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next presentation is going to be by Jamie Latchum, Director of the Water Resources Utilities.
Water fund starts on the reports at page 8. I'm going to go briefly over the water fund revenues. We have special connection fees, which is EDUs. We're projecting to receive 37 EDUs from several entities. AutoZone is expected to purchase one. Homes at Berlin at 150 Flower Street, one. Residential, we're projecting to be built one unit. And Willis Wolf Terrace, estimated to purchase 34 EDUs. Total of $163,725. It's a slight decrease from projections for fiscal 20 of $4,425, or 3%. Water services, taking a very conservative approach for the increase due to the situation and also the conservation approach of the residents for the next year, of an increase of $30,660,000 projected to be collected from water sales. Ready to serve, decrease of $2,024,000. Service material, that's what water department is providing in services for the community, and we're receiving that back, billing them through the invoicing. Water tower rent, a slight increase of $1,400 or 2%. Projected to be at $65,000. Those are the rents received from AT&T and T-Mobile and antennas sitting on the top of the water tower. And pretty much this is it. So the total projected revenues for water department is $941,475, $25,975 increase, or 2.84%. Is that the numbers accurate from what on PDF? It's not.
Sure, 100% increase. It's okay.
So it's covering the very bottom line, cutting it off.
It looks like it's taking whatever you have on as the last cell above the division line and just carrying that forward.
Okay, I'm sorry, I apologize. It's somehow the PDF formatted, it didn't go through the
My main concern was with where the mayor was heading, is that whatever we put online, let's just make sure that that's correct.
Yeah.
Right. But also, this is just the very draft. The introduction will be replaced, and what we adopt will be the final report, and I'll make sure that the numbers will tie to the printouts.
Thank you.
Jamie, you're going to start on page 9 with the water administration.
All right. Really, we try to keep the budget fairly balanced. The only thing we had is really not much in the budget for the administration side. It looked like a fairly state level. And then page number 11, the water treatment. We did put in for capital. No, water treatment, we didn't put anything in there other than, I think the well house should have been in there.
Jamie, hold on a second.
Water administration
page 10, got to give the total numbers.
Oh, it's 16% less.
Yes.
Right, so.
The general overhead is, again, recalculated according to the funds and imbalances in comparison to the general fund. So contingency went down from 81,000 for fiscal 20 to 3,900 for fiscal 21, and the general overhead went down a little bit. So with that said, there's a decrease of $70,493, or 16% to be exact, 15.93. So the total budget requested for water administration is $372,138. And you have the same thing. Okay, then I will be pulling them.
I'm sorry, that's why.
Do you want me to rerun this report so quickly, or are we just okay going on? Reprint them for everybody?
I'm okay, just as long as you read whatever.
I'm
It's probably in that packet.
No problem. That way you have it. And then we get everything.
I'm on right now.
I'm okay. As long as Natalie keeps saying.
It's okay. Yeah, we're okay.
Tavern's just go from the paper instead of your computer, so you have.
Everything else is the same.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mary, you have the total numbers, the same as I'm reading them?
Yeah.
Page 11 is water treatment.
Water treatment is the, we have one full-time employee. They take care of the treatment of the water system and pretty much everything that we pump out of the ground. Really, it went down 2.22%. Mine is a negative of $3,917.
And total requested is $172,429. That's a slight decrease. We're reevaluated the amount for utilities and look back on several years what the utilities been for the water treatment, decreasing them by $5,000. That's the decrease. Water distribution starts on page 12.
And water distribution with contracted services went a little up a little bit in the reason of being out on 376 Bay Street due to we're doing some stuff out there with the state highway. Capital outlay equipment went up from $54,000 to $163,000 this year. One part of it being is the Powell Avenue wellhouse. It's one of the old, it's the oldest wellhouse in town. It's I believe the building's 1951 or something. I have to ask Marvin, but it's real. So we were trying to put some money aside so we can. It needs to be remodeled. It needs to be rebuilt.
The building's falling apart. If you've not seen it, it's flat roof, and it's a cinder block building. It's not real pretty, but it definitely needs some serious.
Which location is this?
Powell Avenue.
Powell. Thank you.
Where the old standpipe used to be, it's right behind the old standpipe on Powell. Right there, the public works yard.
So requested for Powelton Avenue is $103,725. And also, Jamie, you have, you want to go through the capitals?
Yes. We'd also like to put in some insert valves. We did some down, everybody's aware of, there on the corner of Broad and West this year. We would like to do some more this year so that we could eliminate turning off as much water as we had to that night. So some of these valves will be placed strategically out through town. But we would like to put them in this year.
That way, if you have a repair or something, you can limit the number of people who are temporarily without water service. Not as broad as it is now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Vehicle maintenance went up a little bit, but that was, it went up just a little bit. And overall, it says it goes up. It went up 33%, and the reason being is we put more money in for capital this year. For the well house and everything, and I requested $396,908.
So there's a separate printout if you want the details for capital, but also you can see them on the budget pages as well. So well house, Powelton Avenue, 103725, street water valves, three of them for $27,000 total. Inserter valves, three of them for a total of $33,000. And the capital outlay for total of water fund is $163,725, which will be supported by special connection revenues, which are the EED collections. That is all for the water fund.
So the water fund overall, or water distribute, the water fund overall, when you take the pluses and the minuses, it comes out to 0% change?
No, Mayor. Water fund overall is 2.84% increase. Because your revenue is applicable to your expenses.
Okay,
so it's applicable to all of the three departments.
Thank you.
Hey, Jamie. How large is that building at Powell Avenue?
The building? quantity, we could get a little bit cheaper rate.
I'd like to see that. So I'll get up with you. Thank you.
What's the current dimension of the building that's there? I can't place it.
10 by 20 maybe, if that.
Is there?
Yeah.
Is there a huge cost difference by going for the larger square footage?
Well, we were going to try to keep the old building intact while we built the new building, and then tear the new old building down once we built the new building around it. So that's why it was going to be a little bit bigger. And that way we could keep it operational so we wouldn't be down a well for a couple months while we were building the building.
Now, is the dimension that you just quoted the larger size, is that what you would need to effectively build around it and then tear it down?
Yes.
Okay.
How much room is the one that's in there now?
I want to see it as well. I can't picture it. Like, I don't know exactly which one it is.
Camouflage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it, read it?
Yeah. Are we ready to move on to
the sewer? We're moving, if no questions, we're moving to sewer fund, page 14. I'll go with the sewer fund revenues. COLA fees, outsiders are supported to dump the sludge to the treatment plant at a fee per gallon. Projections are a little bit lower just by looking at what we're receiving so far. 98,400 projected for fiscal 21 and decrease of 16,600. Special collection connection fees, which is EDU collections at the 37, the same exact project at a different rate, total $453,657, a decrease of $12,261. Living the same projections for ready to serve, that's a reserved connections to the water sewer infrastructure of the town. Sewer services, projections of $85,000 increase at $1.8 million. Again, just taking a conservative approach for the next year. And the remainder of the little miscellaneous revenues will stay the same. So total revenue or total sewer fund balance projected for fiscal 21 is $2,459,807, an increase of $56,000. Or 2.33%.
Now, we adjusted the hauler fees this fiscal year.
Yeah.
And I may have been imagining this, but I thought hauler fees were up. Am I incorrect?
Well, a lot of it's dependent on the water table of the ground. So,
okay.
Drier the year, the less you're going to put people's septic systems work.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's all based off of the weather, too.
We're also looking at this upcoming year with not many places open and events, outdoor facilities, so we're just reducing it to be conservative.
Now, are the predominant customers of the hauler fees, are they residential or commercial?
Well, we don't, most of your commercial has involved grease and we don't accept grease, so not, I'd say 99% of it's residential.
So this is going to be less affected by the commercial market?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Going to each department of the sewer fund, starting with page 15. The first line item I want to highlight before Jamie jumps into the administration is the $50,000 projected only, I'm repeating, is transfer back to the general fund to repay the due to due from between the funds. This transfer is not going to be made till the very end of the year, and it's based accordingly on the sewer fund balance. So if it's possible, it's going to happen. If it's not, then we'll just hold on to it.
And that's normal. That's the way it always works, is once the budget year is over, the last day or the last working day of the budget year.
But that's first year we're going to allow the sewer fund to project an actual transfer back to general fund.
Yeah.
Can we have a schedule created for the repayment of that debt?
Sure.
I'm smiling. I know you can't tell. Thank you.
So I'll start on the
roll flat, it's 2016.
So the total for sewer administration as a department on page 16, as requested, 1,218,395. It's a slight increase of $1,900 in comparison with current year. The two items I want to highlight here is the sewer fund. There is a large debt, and to service this debt, the total is $632,708 in total. So that's the hopes for to collect the special connection revenues, which is EBU, to cover. The projections is going to come to a little bit lesser, so we're going to allocate the regular operating revenues, obviously, to carry the services. Collection system starts at page 17.
In the collection system, capital outlay went up $95,000. Reason being, we need to do some work to Decatur Street, street extended lift station, and William Street. We need to rehab that lift station due to the fact that some of the pumps right there are 19. I want to say they're 61s or 70s, you know, or 1960, late mid 60s or early 70s. So we would like to replace them and put some more up to date and update some of the electrical work in there. And that was that's the big key item for the reason that budget increased by 45%.
Now, do we have other lift stations that we're anticipating have to be upgraded in the next, over the next 5 years?
Yes, sir. Broad Street, the electrical, it's 1971, it's stamped into it. I've been here 20 years, nothing's really ever been done inside other than replacing the guide rails. Probably 346 West and 346 East. Both of them have to be some work done to them.
So the capital outlay for collection system, Decatur Street lift station, as requested, $15,000. William Street lift station requested as $120,000. A total of $135,000 for the collection system. So total capital outlay for wastewater fund is $172,500, all of which will be supported by the operating revenue. Going back to the question, can we create a repayment plan for the monies that are owed from the sewer to the general fund? Yes, absolutely, but we also have to plan and project that what is really a priority according to Jamie. Those lift stations haven't been touched in so many, many years. The EBU collection fund money is set aside in a special escrow account. And we also, always attribute those to repay the debt as a priority, and then everything else, what's left, could be attributed to the capital priorities that need it to be. If anything or any left afterwards, we can put on a schedule as a repayment to general fund. Unfortunately, in the past, that never was a perfect scenario happened. Looking at fiscal 21 projections, the EDUs, if we take the total amount, does not cover the total debt service. So the operating revenues jump in and cover the capital cost and a portion of the debt service. So what's left is enough to run the fund. With the contingency for fiscal 21, we're only going to, I'm not sure if we even have any. Highlighted. It's in water in the sewer administration.
44,000.
That's the rainy day. So if nothing happens, everything goes well, we can make the transfer of 50,000 to general fund and touch the contingency and take 40,000 and transfer to general fund. But that's in a perfect scenario. So the repayment plan is useful, of course. It's going to take probably more than 30 years. With the scenario that we will sell enough EDUs each year
sit here and listen to what Jamie has planned for capital outlays, and I look at the price of the capital outlays that we have currently, $50,000, I think, would be better served going towards those capital projects than attempting to try and repay this debt service that, in my opinion, we've not been making any effort to repay and should almost be looked at as bad debt that's uncollectible.
Okay.
That's my opinion, but...
Well, that's something we can also have, you know, have our accounting firm look at in terms of liquidating some of that debt that, you know, we weren't aware that was accumulating, especially when it came to the sewer fund.
Put in sewer fund and write an office of that, that will put a big, big strain on the general fund that basically will wipe off the reserve.
But it's...
probably nothing. So I'd rather have a plan and have 50,000 or 100, or hopefully 150 a year planned, and be able to transfer this amount back to general fund to support the reserve, then write it off and just go with the flow.
But I mean, honestly, right now, I mean, every year PKS sits there and says the same exact thing, that if you're not making a valid attempt to pay it down...
Well, this is the first year after we raised sewer and water rates, we're able to set aside 50. Also, we're planning on doing another study with Jim Holloway, which hopefully will help us to allocate revenues to set aside for capital projects for the future necessities, also to set aside some sort of amount, I'm hoping larger than $50,000 a year to repay the general fund.
But for how long has that debt been there without trying to make any effort to repay it?
We're making an effort fiscal 21 for $50,000.
In a real world, you need both. I mean, if you want to be honest about it, that's what you need. You're going to have to, sooner or later, we're going to have to increase the size of the plan.
Yep.
And then we've got to fix what we've got right now, which we really should put the money back towards the money that it borrowed. If you don't, it wrecks the balance sheet.
I mean, the balance sheet is fictitious, honestly, right now. I mean...
it's a receivable.
It is a receivable, only if the receiving agent can actually pay the debt, which we can't.
But I think it's an attempt to...
I understand the attempt, but what I'm also saying is that if this fiscal year we move forward at the end of this budget and we say we can put $50,000 towards that debt repayment, and then we roll around the next fiscal year and we're like, oh crap, we need $50,000 for a capital project that we couldn't cover, what are we going to do, just take it again?
No, then we have to really rethink of the structure of the fund itself. If the fund cannot support the cost that it needs to run and cover the debt, and cover the capital, and cover the existing debt, which is basically due to another fund. Think of it as you're repaying the bank as well. You can't bail it out. So then the fees and everything else have to be restructured to the extent that it could support personnel, operating costs, capital costs, debt costs, and depreciation at the end.
I just see the $50,000 better suited towards sitting in a contingency that's rolled over, that gives that fund a little flexibility in the event that we have an OCRAP moment when we need to be able to put a capital project on board, like what happened down the road. That was not a foreseeable expenditure. And if that money had not been there, we would have had to look at the general fund or borrowing through some other mechanism.
Well, that's why I specifically said that we're going to leave the transfer till the very end, and hopefully that's going to happen in the last of the year, fiscal 21. But it has to happen. It cannot just go away.
Can I ask a question? It seems to me, because this is what we found out a year ago, over a year ago, is that ultimately, to be able to do both responsibly, at some point in the future, not years, but at some point in the future, we're going to have to raise the sewer fund rates again. I mean, basically, if there's not enough money coming in to pay off at least reasonable payment of debt over, let's say, 30 years, and have our capital improvements, then the water and sewer fees are too low. And I think part of this is the money that was spent that cost us so much was also not just to keep the water flowing, but to make sure the whole operation is environmentally sustainable and responsible. And I think everybody supports, most people support that. But what we're finding as a town, and which I'm everywhere I go talking to other officials, environmental responsibility has a price. And it's a lot higher than we were told 10 years ago or so. And again, fine, it's the right thing to do, but now what we have to do is adjust the rates upwards over time so that it comes back in balance. Because we would have, if we'd known how much, and again, we took the projections that were given to us by qualified, engineers and so forth, but it wasn't just here, it's everywhere. It's just, it costs a lot more. So if we're going to hold that course, which I think is the right thing to do, we're going to all have to get used to higher fees that are related to environmental responsibility.
And I want to remind everyone, year to date compared to last FY, the two funds, water and sewer, mm-hmm. right now, I mean, the additional revenues are roughly $390,000.
That's because we...
That's right.
We just wouldn't be able to keep going. We need to make those adjustments. Those adjustments are not punitive. Nope. They're basically based on the new reality of not only providing water, but providing it in an environmentally responsible way. And that's just, it wouldn't matter who's sitting in any of these chairs.
I would love to see Gene Holloway's report for it gives a much better picture of what her study is going to show us we're going to need.
We're working on it. I don't think we will be able to push something for fiscal 21 because it's in such a rough stage right now, but I think the goal is to present for your review some sort of a draft by the end of this fiscal year. And then maybe discuss it more in details in fiscal 21 and maybe fiscal 22 go with the veterans.
I mean, what is the expected date of her completion or her report?
I'm sorry.
Any idea?
I'm going to go take a wild guess, 30 to 45 days, maybe something to draft in.
We'll see.
But back to my point, I'd like to either see a debt repayment schedule or writing off the debt. We got to do one or the other.
I think writing off the debt is kind of premature now. For even a consideration, and due to the fact this is the first year that we have with these increased rates, I think to consider something like that, we're going to have just a little more history.
But what do you think about, I mean, the PKS literally says every year we need to have a repayment schedule. And every year we say okay, but we never get the repayment schedule.
I'm not talking about a schedule. I'm talking about your suggestion that the debt be written off as just bad debt.
But that was their recommendation, was either to have a repayment schedule for that debt or that debt is being inaccurately represented and needs to be written down.
The recommendation was to have a solid attempt to start repaying. It not necessarily with the schedule, because the schedule, if you're going to take a number and divide it into $3.5 million, that's going to take forever and ever. So if we can put $50,000 in fiscal 21 and $250,000 in fiscal 22, that's great. But the attempt to repay that debt is what PKS has asked us to do.
Yeah.
And I believe they did say a partial write-off, not a total write-off.
Because they were hinting at the fact that we can't just carry $3.5 million as a.
I definitely agree with that. Just like as part of their presentation this year, if you'll ask them to be more specific about what our options are, I think that would be very helpful. Because at least now we're in the process of doing that, and what the projections and what percentage roughly their recommendation, because we ultimately have to make the whole budget work. But what percentage we should. Considered write off, and what percentage should we pay down in what schedule? Mm-hmm. So that should be part of the presentation, which will come in the fall.
Well, let's close the fiscal 20 because that's going to be the first year with the new rate implemented. Mm-hmm. Let's go in fiscal 21 with the projected $50,000 and the new rate implemented for 12 months, because fiscal 20 is not even 12 months because we started the rates July 1st. The billing fell half months, and then we bill a month behind. billing. So it's only 11 months of true-up rate increased revenues. Going in fiscal 22, let's take an approach of looking into a percent reduction of the DUT due from fund in a schedule after we will have 12 full months of revenues. That's my suggestion.
I'd ask John Stern to give his opinion as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean now.
Yeah, why wait till the fall?
Yeah, I don't think they wait till the fall. You know the discussion?
We've discussed that in and off with Leslie Michalik, and she basically said it's ultimately end of our decision and see how much we can support to do that.
What I'm saying is they'd like to hear from BKS based on what we're considering now in this budget, while we still have time, and hear what the recommendation is, or if they're saying you can do this or you can do this, but we have to choose the consequences of whatever decision it is. So just give them a call and see if they can't be here at the next meeting. Okay?
An email's on me.
The other thing is that people will be able to, especially on these services, is hear what we're trying to decide. You can't hear an email,
yes,
but you can hear a discussion.
That's fine by me.
Okay. Thank you. All right. What's next?
The stormwater fund is the only thing left on the schedule for today, and it starts on page 23. Fiscal 21 stormwater fund revenues projected to be $378,650, a decrease of $75,900 or 16.7%. Basically, we're not anticipating to receive any grants, and the revenues projections pretty much staying at the same level, with the exception that we will be presenting a rate increase that being evaluated and done with help of EA engineering, and that's upcoming on
the executive session
discussion. So if the stormwater rate fees will be adjusted up, then I will recalculate revenues and introduce with different numbers.
So that our goal will be to make sure that there's do everything we can to make sure there's not a minus in that budget for this year,
right,
for the new fiscal year. And that's why we have to seriously consider, as we said again over a year ago, that the decision by the mayor council this past budget year was to postpone it because of everything else we had to do. So we said we would consider it again this year, so now it's that time to consider for the fiscal 21 budget, and so that's where we are.
So the same decrease and the same percent of 16.7% decrease is reflected in the expense size, obviously, because we have to have a balanced budget. The only item is very different is the first line item on page 24 is the contribution back to general fund, and that's, again, a projected number with the hopes by the end of fiscal 21